Did you know the risk of cancer does not stop at the scene of the fire? Firefighters are constantly exposed to diesel exhaust fumes and other airborne toxins that get trapped inside the station, leading to cancer. Protect yourself with MagnaGrip. Through the combination of MagnaGrip exhaust removal systems and AirHawk air purification systems, only MagnaGrip eliminates 100% of all cancer-causing toxins within the station. Learn more at MagnaGrip.com.
In the world of firefighting and public safety, reliability is key. That's why for over two decades, first responders nationwide have trusted the Firestore as their go-to source for essential equipment, apparel, and accessories. From top-of-the-line firefighting gear like helmets, boots, and thermal imaging cameras, the Firestore has it all, tailored to the specific needs of our heroes on the front lines. But they don't stop there. Their extensive selection also includes EMS supplies, safety apparel like flame-resistant clothing and high-visibility gear, as well as a wide array of tools from hand tools to vehicle extrication tools, supporting public safety professionals in their duties. Partnered with industry leaders, the Firestore's commitment to quality and excellence is unmatched, because when it comes to protecting communities, there's no room for compromise. Join the thousands of first responders who rely on the Firestore. Visit thefirestore.com online or in-store today. The Firestore, your reliable partner for fire and public safety equipment.
Welcome to 5 After Midnight. It's a new show where we talk about the things the way you would around a sleep-deprived kitchen table. When you've run five or more calls after midnight, your brain feels half gone, and you and your crew have absolutely no filter. Just pure honesty. The goal of this series is to kick around the small things that really aren't so small and have a big impact in the way our firehouses function. My name is Stephanie. I'm genuinely not an expert at anything. I'm just here to ask the sometimes awkward questions. Enjoy.
You've come too far, don't let this slip away. Fade out like they said we would.
Well, hey, I am joined today by the wonderful Jim Bernecca and his sister, Hillary Hawkins. Jim, a lot of you guys have seen his show, APS Radio, here on Fire Engineering, and Jim has written a book with his sister, and it's called Overcoming Tuesday, First Responder's Tale of Healing and Resiliency. I was one of the lucky, three people, just lie to me and say it was three, that got a copy of this book before it comes out in the beginning of May, and full transparency, I have not finished it yet. It is not the light read that I thought it was going to be coming from you, Jim. I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there now. There's no crayon pictures. It's amazingly, it's a really well thought out book. So that's what we're here to talk about today. So Hillary, take it away, because I think you did a majority of the writing and the storytelling in this, because this was your book coming in and talking to your brother, the first responder. And what started all of that?
So just everything that he went through, I had told him, like, you have such a story here. Like, I believe in this story. And he's like, oh my gosh, no, I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to tell it. And I was like, okay, well, if you ever want to tell your story, I'll help you. And it took a while, and he came around, and one day he was like, hey, do you still want to do that thing? And I was like, what thing? He was like, do you still want to write this book together? And I was like, yeah, if you want to. And he was like, I think I'm ready. Like, I think I can push past all of the pain. And it just became a mission to now let's use the pain that I went through and let's find some purpose. Let's try and empower people. Let's help them learn from my mistakes so that they don't make them too. So pretty much we would Zoom and he would tell me these stories and I would write them, and then I would write it and I would send it back to him. And that's just kind of the process that we did to do the book. So it was a long process. There were a lot of tears. Some of them, I didn't know if he was going to be able to get through it. And I felt bad, like kind of pushing him, like, okay, well, what happened? And sometimes I would just have to sit and wait until he could finish telling me the story. And it was just a lot of those. And it eventually came together into a story.
Jim, this book isn't just kind of a narrated history, there's a lot of stuff in there. You've got health struggles, physical struggles. I did, when I was kind of thumbing through it to talk about today, since I hadn't finished it, I realized that there's a poem later on in the book. And I mean, that level of intimacy, being able to share that with the rest of us, what happened, or what key moment came along that you thought, you know what, being vulnerable with the rest of the fire service is worth it to share this message? Because we eat our own. This can't be an easy thing to have decided to do. What made you do that?
You know, I would say I started being vulnerable when I was still on the job. And it was really when I became the wellness coordinator that I realized, in order to help people, in order to let them lower their guard, a lot of times I had to put myself out there, put my business out there, and share my struggles. And that empowered them to feel comfortable and actually sharing their struggles as well. So that vulnerability thing really came about the last couple of years on the job. And it kind of has continued then. And it was really, and I've talked about it before, where you would, you know, this stuff, like, you know, vulnerability was a weakness when we started. Like, how, you know, you could not share any feelings or emotions, you know, at the kitchen table. Just, you know, if you did that, you know, you'd be labeled. And it was only until recently that is, I would say, gone away a little bit. But you know, I've realized over the years that vulnerability is actually a strength. It's not a weakness. And, it did take me a while to feel comfortable about really going out and sharing all this to the world. Like, you know, I feel like I've been pretty open and honest on these shows and, but like actually sitting down and writing a book, it took a lot of warming up to that idea. But I just realized, and Hillary was a big proponent of this, of just, there's a lot of stuff to what you've gone through, and it can help others. And making sure that was the premise of this, that this isn't a money grab. This isn't a get rich. I know I'm not going to be on a New York Times bestseller list. Like, but if it helps one person, all the time that Hillary and I spent is worth it. And that was like, when you have that motivation and have those ideals, like, it, as grueling as it was, I think it was worth it. And I know we're both really proud with what is actually came together, how it did. It's kind of crazy, because it was definitely all over the place when we started, but being able to put it together, and it's just crazy. It's like when I held that book for the first time, it was like, I can't believe that this is a real thing.
Jim, I've known you for quite some time. You actually got me started into the podcasting world. And it's funny because, A, this is the most serious conversation we've ever had without jokes. And B, you talked about writing this book. You kicked it around for a little while. And I think once you started writing it, the conversations that I began to have with you, I feel like you had more of a sense of peace and calm about you when you began to write this. How therapeutic was this for you? And then for Hillary, how therapeutic was this for you as a family member of a firefighter? Because I've never been a family member of a firefighter, but I would imagine you almost feel like there's a little bit of a wall there of, you can't peek over it into their world. You don't know what's going on. So how much for you two, and for you, Jim, was this just a bonding experience, a therapy session, all the above?
Because kind of all the above. I should note too, like, this wasn't the first idea of a book. The first idea of a book, and I think you know this, was I reached out to Bobby, and it was actually the last conversation I had with him. But I had ridden, I was supposed to, okay, so I'm teaching FDIC last year. Fire engineering always likes you to write an article regarding the subject you teach. And it was all about wellness. And I remember reaching out to him with just my outline, because my outline was huge, because there's so many components of wellness. And I asked him, is there a book here? And he said, yeah, if you want it to be, absolutely. And I think the premise there was more of a textbook, kind of what like Dean Ali is going to be doing. And that's really not, that wasn't for me. And I kind of knew that. But when I went back and looked, I realized a lot of those things that I would have discussed in that book are still relevant in my story. And I can go about and talk about sleep and talk about cancer and talk about behavioral health and talk about hearing loss. I mean, I can talk about all this stuff, but do it through my actual story. And when I kind of realized that, I was realizing that allowed me to, I think, move forward and actually go through with this. And as far as talking about this stuff with Hillary, I don't know if it was therapeutic or not. I think I caught her off guard, because we had an outline like of chapters of ideas that we wanted to discuss. And I think the normal person would have thought that I would have started with like something pretty easy, you know, and that's not what I did. I went right for the dirt, the nasty, heavy stuff from the start. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's just because I wanted to get through it. And I felt like if I can get through this part, then all the other stuff will be a lot easier. I don't know why I did it, but that's what I did. And it was, you know, that's a perfect, I think, segue for Hill to tag her in and talk about this. Cause I know that caught her off guard and she had to kind of make a decision right away.
So I would say like 70% of this book, the stories he told me, I had never heard before. And I was caught off guard because we're really close. We've been close for a long time. We can talk to each other about the hard stuff. Like, we've loved each other through the best versions of ourselves and not so good versions of each other. So I kind of thought, throw anything at me. Like, I can handle it. Tell me whatever. And when he started off first telling me like the first story, I remember just thinking, whoa. I had no idea. And I had to make a decision right away. Like, I can't listen to this as his sister because it would wreck me. I had to listen to this like as a writer who wanted to tell the story right and do it justice. So that's what I did. So I kind of had to turn off some of the emotion to be able to tell it right because I had no idea like what he was going through. It's crazy. He was like a duck treading water. Like above the surface, he looked fine. He looked normal. Under the surface, he was like frantically just trying to stay afloat, but we couldn't see it.
What I think you see out there are the writings that are related to family and the fire service. It's often husband and wife. So it's presented as the couple kind of version of things. But blood relative, that's always going to be kind of a different aspect of things. What was the big takeaway, the forever way that you're going to view your relationship with your brother, the thing that you really learned you needed to change or view differently with Jim and just his life and what he's been through? What do you want other family members to know?
And so, well, we intentionally wrote it because I've read some books by first responders that were really geared toward other first responders, and they were brilliant. But I told him, I really want to write something that first responders are going to be like, yep, that's it, I get it. But also, like, spouses, siblings, parents can read it and go, oh, that's why they do certain things that they do. Okay, that makes sense. So for me, it was like, I had no idea, first of all, the trauma that you were even going through to be able to even know how to talk to you about it. So it's like, okay, first you need to share what's actually happening with the people that you love. He thought that he was protecting Lauren by not telling her what he was dealing with at work, and would just come home and be grumpy, and it was hurting both of them. So that's like the first thing. It's like, you've got to talk to the people that love you, because they're going to support you. And I mean, he told me the things that I shared in the book were like the sugar-coated version of what he told me. Like, he would just lay it all out there. And I hope that I proved to him that, like, we can handle like what you go through. This isn't a burden that y'all need to carry by yourselves. It's too heavy for anybody to carry by yourselves. And even if I don't know the right thing to say, sometimes there's not a right thing to say, but just to know, okay, well, I'm here. Let's get through this together. Like, you're not alone. I think it's the biggest thing that I wanted him to know. Like, your worst story where you feel terrible, I'm looking at you saying, I've never been more proud of you, because it takes such strength to what other firefighters are like, yeah, you're a baby, you can't handle it. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is the bravest I've ever seen you in any circumstance. And I hope that that's what other people get out of it too.
Jim, flip that question back around to you. We as first responders fail. We either do one of two things. We either hold it in, we don't tell our family what's going on, or we get really over annoyed and we're crass about it and we just blatantly drop it. We say the horrible thing that happened the night before, and we watch their face, and then they shut up and shut down. And then neither one of you talks about what you went through the day or the night before that is sitting heavy on your chest. Having to, over months, tell these stories to your sister, what was the value you found in finally communicating that with a family member? And I mean, how would you say first responders can start to successfully do that correctly, is what I'm trying to say, because it is something we're terrified of doing. We're terrified of putting too much hurt on them, or we just want them to stop asking. So we're aggressive and crass about it. Where's that line?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know for the very first part of my career, for sure, I definitely internalized everything and just stuffed it down. And I think I got better as I progressed, and especially near the end of talking. And I did open up to Lauren about a lot of things. Everybody else, not as much. I mean, clearly, like, you know, Hillary only knew about 30% of these things, as, you know, she said earlier. But even though I was opened a little bit, it really wasn't the full, like, it wasn't everything. It was a very watered down version of whatever I was talking about. It wasn't the full grasp. It wasn't really until, like, I didn't hold back with Hillary. I let it all go. And it was, by this time I've realized, like, I've accepted that I have to be open and honest and willing and share this stuff and get it out there. And there's no point holding back. Like, I know I'm at the position now where I'm not adding any more traumas. I'm not adding anything else. Like, I'm in a good place where I'm not having anything else come into play. So I just felt like I was finally comfortable really letting it go. But it took a long time. More than anything, time. That's the best thing, is being able to process all the stuff and then being in a good place to where you can share. And it just, I mean, I think enough distance has passed with a lot of this stuff to where finally felt like I could share this with Hillary. And as far as other first responders go, like, you know, you can talk to your spouses, to family members, to even friends, I mean, your peers. You don't have to necessarily say everything. You don't have to paint them the picture. You can, you know, they don't necessarily need all the gory, you know, highlights, lowlights, whatever you want to call them, but you can still let them know what happened, or you had a bad shift, or you need some time, or you know, I'm going to go in the garage and do some crafting shit, listen to my jukebox, whatever it may be. Like just having that relationship where you can be open and having them hopefully respond to you in a good way, to where they're like, okay, like, get a nap, do what you got to do, to where I can have you back, you know, a better version of you than cranky, you know, just went through a lot of shit, you know, guy. So we just have to learn again that vulnerability is a strength, and stop hiding stuff. Get it all out there, be an open page. Again, you don't have to go with the details, but like, having that communication is going to make the rest of your career that much easier just to get through, you know, being, you know, instead of me coming home and being a grumpy asshole to my wife, like, it would have been easier just to explain why I was feeling this, and hey, I need a nap so I can get back to normal gym.
On social media, I follow a couple of the different wives of firemen kind of Instagram accounts, because I am so curious how family members view us as a culture, as a fire service. And based off of some of the things I've read and what you said, it's almost like families need to have a pre-plan of, listen, when I come home and I am quiet and I am whatever, please do not take anything I say or do personally for at least 5 to 6 hours. It's just, I think when we come home, the people around us missed us, or they need to tap out because they've been with the kids for 24, 36, 48 hours, whatever. So they then internalize all the stuff that we have to say or the attitudes we portray, instead of realizing, hey, they might have seen this kind of stuff coming off shift. They might have been holding someone's hand during their last moments. What did they just experience, and what does their mind need to do to come down from it? I think so many people think that, well, they didn't run anything big, bad, or gory. I didn't hear anything about that. So, like, they're ready to dive back into normal life. And that's not the case. And that's something you guys really presented well in this book, is it's not the big badass calls that are going to drain us as much as it is just those heartfelt life calls, right? So maybe the next thing you two get to write about is that family game plan of how to understand and get through that.
I actually think that's been kind of written about. Mike and Ann Galliano's book, which is a fire engineering book, by the way, the Firefighter Marriage, I forget what exactly the title is called, but they have a chapter in there called Reentry Time. And Ann and Mike did an amazing job at, like, that's my favorite chapter of that book. And it talks about coming home and just basically being able to tell your spouse right there, like, thumbs up, thumbs down, like, you know, give me a minute, let me take a nap, or I'm good to go, I had a good shift, let's go. Like, that is, that's the best chapter I've ever seen. It's already been written, Mike and Ann Galliano.
Now you've shamed me into reading that book, especially before I see them at FDIC.
It's a good book, and they do that talk too, and they talk about it then. So they're doing that talk.
Hopefully Mike doesn't see this one. I'll be sitting in on that now. Hillary, what was your favorite moment about writing this book with your brother?
Oh, gosh. My favorite moment? I think just getting back to where we used to be. He went away to Center of Excellence for rehab. And up until then, I had no idea that it was as bad as it was. And then when he got back, I just felt like I was treading, like, just such a fine line of, I don't want to, like, be annoying and be like, are you okay? What can I do to help? And just that, like, golden retriever energy, like, I'm here, how can I help? What can I do? Or he's just like, I'm just trying to, like, get back to life. I'm just trying to figure things out. So there was, like, some time that passed that I didn't call, because I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to, like, trigger him. So it was so nice to just, like, get to talk to him regularly again. And it even got to like, if I didn't talk to him for like a day, I'm like, oh, this is weird. I haven't talked to him. So I think that was my favorite part. It's just getting back to where we were before he went and just him feeling like, I think I don't have to hold anything in anymore. I don't have to hold back. Not that you have to tell me your deepest, darkest secrets at all, but it just felt good that I felt like he could be comfortable. I wanted to be a safe place for him to land. And it just felt nice to have him back.
Something that didn't hit me until you said that about this book is, Jim, you and I had a bunch of conversations before you went to the Center of Excellence. And I think you told me like the day before you were headed down there. And I'm a firefighter too. I didn't see anything. I wasn't, you know, I caught stress. I caught fatigue, but I didn't catch anything from you that made me think, this guy's not in a good spot. None of that was there for me. And I'm somebody who is involved in the peer world as well. So I think the fascinating thing about this book is how not just family members, but peer to peer. I mean, when we hide the signs, we excel at hiding the signs. We excel at hiding the stress. So it was really humbling to read those parts of your book, knowing you and I had just talked and I missed it all. That was really, really eye-opening. That sad part aside, I'm going to ask you, what was your favorite part of writing this book with Hillary?
Oh, well, let me say, before I even answer that, I acted my ass off. I mean, I should have an Oscar or something. Like, I was really from May till mid-May to mid-August, I was having ideation and I was internally just falling apart. And then with just the way I was being treated at work, and I'm like kind of just scapegoated and really betray, I mean, the organizational betrayal on top of everything, losing my purpose, like all that stuff. Like, and I pretended like I was okay. I really did. I fooled about everybody. I mean, the night that I called and went to Center of Excellence, I went to Center of Excellence the very next day after I called. I had lunch with my captain. She had no idea, you know. And that very, you know, fast forward 6 hours later, and I'm on the phone, and I'm a day later, I'm in Maryland. So, you know, the signs and symptoms are not as obvious as people think. And we are all actors. When we get on the job, you know this, we go to people's scenes and we're tired, we're cranky, we hate them because they've called 17 times already this month, but we still put a smile on our face and we act. So we are just, our job encourages us to be actors and actresses. So, I really had one person that saw through the facade and called me out on it. And that was it. Nobody else knew. One person really saw through my shit. And he called me out, and I wrote it in the book, or we wrote it in the book. You know, I've got this great tattoo on my leg that is a memorial to my fallen firefighter friends. And it's the IFF logo and the memorial, because I've been there a couple times and I have their names on there. And he told me, he said, I feel like we're going to add your name to your leg. And that absolutely broke me. It was about an hour after that I left work. I called the captain and said, I'm leaving. I'm not coming back. And I didn't come back. I was off until many months later when I finally went back and they hid me at radio repair and until I retired. So that goes on to the acting. As far as the favorite parts of just working with Hillary. It was, like she said, it was great connecting and just spending that time with her, because we were talking, but it was certainly not at the pace that we ended up doing for the book. So catching back up to her, and just reconnecting was I think great. And the stories, it sucked telling the hard stories, but it's not all just suck. There is some funny and good stuff in there. Especially there's really one chapter in particular in which I share some of the fun or crazier stuff. And I think just doing that stuff and getting the laughter out of her and just, that was probably the best chapter to work with, because it wasn't dark. It wasn't heavy like a lot of the other ones.
Yeah.
The title Overcoming Tuesday, you talk in the book about why it is you name that, but Hillary, can you explain why it is you guys name that? Cause it's a neat story.
Yeah. So he gave an interview and it was actually, he was spiraling internally. Nobody knew. And it was, they were doing a story on PTSD and firefighters or first responders. So they're like, Jim, do you want to do the interview? And he's like, yeah. So he's talking to the reporter and he's like, the average person will probably see maybe one or two traumas in their entire lifetime. And for us, we encounter them every shift. Like, it's just another day. It's just Tuesday. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, because I was like, wow, I never thought of it like that. So then we just kind of labeled like the trauma that first responders go through as Tuesday. So when he kind of came out on the other side of that, we were like, well, you've overcome Tuesday. Like, now you've overcome all of the trauma that you've endured. So that's where Overcoming Tuesday came from.
You mentioned, Steph, that poem earlier. Hillary wrote that when I was at the Center of Excellence. And so, you know, I was away. Oh. She was trying to, I think, at that time, just figure out, like, what the hell happened? You know, and she really, I mean, that interview that I did, I mean, it really kind of, I think touched her, and she ended up writing that poem, and that was waiting for me when I came back. Wow. I mean, you talk about heavy shit. Like, I can't read that thing without breaking down.
Knowing all that both of you know about each other and the way that you've viewed Jim's life, Hillary, what would you tell family members to do differently in terms of how they treat their first responder?
I would just say extend grace, because you don't know what they've gone through and you don't necessarily need the details. You just need to know, I had a really rough run and I need some space. And I guess space and grace. Like, if they're not acting the best version of themselves, it's okay. And also, if they need to be alone, process what they've gone through, allow them that time to do that. And that's something that I didn't realize. Probably a lot of people don't recognize it, because they just see you for what it is. Like, yeah, you're home from work. How was work? Okay, well, this is what happened when you were gone. And, you know, they just missed you. They're happy that you're back. Life keeps going on when you're gone. And I think to just pause and say, they might have really had a rough night. They might not have slept. They might have gone through something awful. Or maybe not even something awful. Maybe just a lot of calls and they're just exhausted. So that's what I would encourage family members of first responders to do. And I've learned so much through doing this. So many things my eyes have been opened to, and I hope that other people open their eyes to what y'all go through too, because I had no idea.
She was doing
Jim,
so good.
What do you want
good.
People to get from this book?
I was just going to say, she was doing so good and not acting Southern until the very end there, where she threw in the y'all.
Okay. Ohio's not very Southern.
No, but South Carolina, she's changed. She's
just once in a while I have to throw one a y'all just yeah. slips out.
What's the question, Steph?
Too much time in Southern Virginia. I got to remember it. What's the biggest thing you want people to get out of this book, right? You didn't just write it for your own therapy. You would have just kept some sort of dear diary or gone back to MySpace for that. You wrote it for a reason. And there are the obvious reasons, but.
You know, I mean, the main thing is hope. You know, despite all the crap I went through, I'm still here. And I think I'm stronger and better for it. I mean, I guess that's resiliency, but you know, like the whole hope is that like you can go through a lot of crap and still come out on the other side and still be happy and still live a good life, still be a good parent and husband or wife. Like just the main thing is just hope. And, you know, as much as I wanted to share all this stuff, all these, I thought lessons really, you know, and a lot of them were don't be like me lessons, you know. The other part of it is I just wanted people to know the truth. Like I had a lot of fear at the end of my job of just how I was, because how I was treated and I was threatened. And I really, you know, I just didn't feel safe. Like I didn't know. My future was still up in the air, especially going through the pension stuff. And like, I really just bit my tongue and I just didn't talk about what had happened. And once the pension went through and I knew that my family and I were going to have security and we were going to be good, like I felt it was also time to tell the truth about what had happened. And also with the hope of it not happening to anybody else, you know? So I think the main thing, of course, is hope. But I also, it was nice to be able to just be honest and finally put everything out there, because I was, you know, I kept that really inside too, just out of fear for a long, long time.
Well, Jim and Hillary, I am off duty this weekend. I'm on mommy duty, but not on shift. So I'm really looking forward to actually getting to sit down and finish the book. When I'm done with it, every member of my family will be getting a copy so that they can stop referring to me as the grumpy person when I get off shift. But thank you guys so much for writing this book. It was really exciting for me to pick it up and just see so much reality written from such a just a great perspective of a sister. Viewing her brother's pain and finding out these things about our world was just really humbling and awesome to see. So thank you guys so much for taking the time to write this book. Comes out May 1st, Amazon.
That's right.
So I will be buying it, but thank you in the meantime for my cheater ahead of time copy.
That's a rare copy. There's only 5 of those.
I know. It says not enough for resale. So I'm one of the lucky ones and I know it.
Yeah, you can't sell it. Not even a garage even a sale. Note. Not even a garage sale. You're forbidden. It's like pulling the tag off a mattress.
You even wrote some nice things about me in it. I'm guessing Hillary wrote it because it's all spelled correctly. But
that's not true. That is not true.
I can't read it. It is chicken scratch, so it is probably yours.
That's the only part I lied about in the book. Was on the inside cover of what I wrote to you.
Oh, hey.
I'm kidding.
Well, thank you guys so much for the book, for just your honesty, your vulnerability, and then Hillary for wanting to do this, for wanting to learn more about your brother, but us as a culture. I think this is a game changer, and I'm not just saying that because you're my friend, Jim. I'm saying that because this hadn't been written before, and so to see it be written, to see the message that it's conveying is just, for lack of a better word, it's exciting. It's exciting to see how it's going to touch people and the change it might create. So thank you guys.
Thank you for having us on here and letting us talk about it. We're nervous and excited. I think I'm more nervous than he is. think he's excited. I think I'm a little nervous, but
I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, a little bit nervous. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, you know, the whole time we write this, and I'm not sure if a dozen people are going to buy it or if it's going to be a lot more than that. I have no idea, but I have faith that, you know, getting on your show and just getting out there, that hopefully people will pick it up and they'll find value in it, you know, and then it'll just go from there. And I mean, wherever happens, happens. I'm just going to roll with it.
Yeah.
I've never seen Jim overly excited ever. So I didn't what? Expect that.
I have moments of excitement. It's WrestleMania weekend. I'm excited.
Most excited I've ever seen you is when the last time you got to wear a Hawaiian shirt. So
that's so true. My outfits usually are in the fall winter is flannels and the spring summer is Hawaiian shirts. That's the new gym.
Well, this was the one that had, I think it had Nick's face all over it. I think that was the Hawaiian shirt I saw.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But again,
you're a fool.
It's, well, yeah.
We're delving into dangerous territory now.
No, it's,
thank you,
it's
guys,
all,
for this.
It's all good. Steph, thanks for having us on there. And yeah, I hope everyone gives it a shot. It'll be on Amazon starting on May 1st. And it will just be, initially, we're just going to do the paperback and hardcover. And at some point, I'll have to sit down in front of this mic and do the Audible version of it, which is,
I was
probably
about to say, who gets to do the Audible?
Well,
who gets to narrate it?
Well, it's like written from his perspective, even though I wrote it, so it'll be him.
No, I meant like, are we bringing Brad Pitt in?
No, it'll be. Hey, I've got the equipment.
Do I have
I've got
to listen to Jim's voice.
I've got a sexy voice. I've got a voice made for radio, if anything else. No, I'll do the talk, and I still have to ask. I got to ask our buddy Patrick J. Kenny to also do the foreword, to actually read that and include that in the Audible, which I'm hoping he'll do because he did the Audible for his own book. So hopefully I can get him to do his chapter, which is tremendous. I love his opening. He's such a good man, and both Hillary and I love him dearly.
He's got a cool accent.
He's
got the voice for it.
He set the tone, which I just really appreciate. I have a great connection with him.
No, it's a beautiful foreword.
It was. So also, Jim, thank you, Jim and Hillary, for being my first and last on-screen guests. But I thought that this book deserved a little extra. So we went extra, and I will be going back to audio only next month.
There you go. I already appreciated you, and I will continue to appreciate you, and I'll get to see you live in person in a couple of weeks here in Indianapolis.
Two weeks, not counting. Nobody's nail-biting on that one.
Yeah.
But, again, thank you, guys. May 1st, Overcoming Tuesday. Go check it out.